the Bills and Jets both making major trades as far as wide receivers go. The Cowboys have completely embarrassed themselves again. I'm Adam Wright. You're listening to the Fumble Rooski Podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright. With Chris Kostas, Justin Tucker, and CJ Medeiros, we have a big episode planned for you guys today. Lots of breaking news that has all broke in the last couple of hours. From this morning, we obviously have the Jets, who just literally hours after losing on Monday Night Football, went out and traded for Davante Adams. And then we have the breaking news of literally a few minutes ago, as this episode is recording here on starting at 2:27 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. When you guys get this episode, you will have already known Amari Cooper has been traded to the Buffalo Bills. So again, this is just hours after Davante Adams was traded to the Jets. The Bills saw that and they went literally turning around and saying, "You guys aren't going anywhere. We are the kings of this division, and we're getting our number one quarterback a weapon in Amari Cooper." Now, Cooper has obviously not been having the best season so far. You can give him half a pass because, you know, yes, he's old, but we've seen wide receivers play well past the age of 30. You can give him a pass because of that quarterback situation over there in Cleveland. It is looking really bad. Kevin Stefanski has already come out and still refuses to bench Deshaun Watson. Even after they benched him during the game for Jameis Winston, they refused to remove him as their starter, which is just a really tough situation to be in as a wide receiver who's in his 30s and looking to win a Super Bowl late in his career, looking for that last ounce of football milked out of him. The Buffalo Bills called up and they said, "We have Josh Allen for you. He's going to help you out. And we're going to go for a Super Bowl victory in the next couple years." Their window is still open, clearly, because they have just traded for pretty good wide receiver here. A guy who hasn't been playing his best ball this year, but we know what he is capable of. If he still has it, then Josh Allen is going to amplify that for him. But guys, your thoughts on this breaking news in the last few minutes?
This is a great trade for the Bills. They needed to get another receiver. I mean, this is kind of a talking point amongst you guys about how the Bills needed to get a clear-cut wide receiver one, and they were kind of making do with the fact that they didn't need that wide receiver one. But you could kind of tell it was starting to kind of get to the Bills a little bit, especially in that game against the Texans where Josh Allen only completed 9 passes and nobody could catch to save their life. And now they got a clear-cut wide receiver one in Amari Cooper. And yeah, his time in Cleveland was a little underwhelming, but that was because of the quarterback situation at hand. And before the season, the Browns even restructured his contract for a potential trade, depending on how this season turned out. So that would be a more favorable contract for teams to trade for and pick up. And even during the season as well, there was the rumors that the Browns were going to be looking to shop Amari Cooper. So here we are. And Josh Allen is playing really good football right now too. No interceptions, no turnovers, but he has said that there are plays where there probably should be interceptions or turnovers committed. The ball just bounces his way right now. So if Josh Allen can keep playing the way he's playing right now, this is going to be a very dangerous Bills team. They just have to keep themselves healthy right now. Jeez, English man.
Tucky muted.
I don't even know what to say. First off, congratulations to the Buffalo Bills on the win last night, and congratulations on getting Josh Allen a shiny new weapon. I just wish the Ravens would. Sorry, sorry. No, not. I said Josh Allen a new weapon.
Oh, I thought you said they got a new. You got Josh Allen and a new weapon.
Well, they
yeah,
did.
They got Josh. Yeah, yeah.
Josh Allen got a new weapon.
That's what I said.
The verb thing.
Okay. What do you want right now, Adam?
I thought you meant Josh Allen, comma, a new weapon. Like you got the player and then a new weapon. That's what I thought.
No. But Josh Allen got a new weapon. I wish the Ravens were this aggressive during trades, but I digress. But I believe that the Buffalo Bills, after that win, are going to look a lot better now that they have two wide receivers that they can go to. I really do believe in Keenan Coleman. I think he's a rookie, so I think they'll lean more heavily towards Amari Cooper down the stretch once he gets adjusted to the playbook. To me, the Bills are dangerous, but they're still not as dangerous as like the Houston Texans, the Kansas City Chiefs, or the Baltimore Ravens. They're still number four, but they've gotten better. And if I'm Amari Cooper, I'm happier than the situation I was just formerly in, which was the Cleveland Browns. So all around, I think it was a good move for both the Buffalo Bills and for Amari Cooper. And he just turned 30. It's not like he's been 30 for like a long time now. He just turned 30. So I think all in all, this can be a tremendous upside for the Buffalo Bills going forward.
So when I look at this trade, this I don't think was something that was going to happen if the Jets didn't just grab Devontae Adams. Spoiler alert, we'll get to that in a minute. This was a pure reactionary trade. This does not happen if the Jets don't do what they just did. And honestly, this was the right move for the Bills. I mean, Cooper's been pretty, I won't say the word dreadful, but he's been a massive underperformer in Cleveland. But then again, anyone would be when they have to play with Deshaun Weinstein. That's neither here nor there. I'm not thrilled with the fact they gave up a third. I feel like you could have got him for like maybe a fifth, but you know, But once again, you did get yourself a wide receiver one, and it was a weakness for them. Because when you look at how Buffalo has played, right, they're losing. I've mentioned this before, and I'll say it again. They've been losing to the contenders. They beat up on the Dolphins, right? You know, the Dolphins lost Tua. They barely beat the Cardinals. They beat up on the Jags. Then the Ravens blow their doors off, and they failed against Houston. And they just eked one out against the Jets as of last night. So Buffalo is in this weird tier where are they going to win their division? Yeah, because their division sucks. But are they a threat to make noise in the postseason? No, they are not. Amari Cooper, I think, would just take them a step in the right direction to at least mitigate that. Do I have them as a Super Bowl threat? No, still no. But if Cooper can even be half the player he was in, well, back then they were called Oakland or Dallas, then yeah, then I definitely think that Allen could definitely rely on him. And who knows, it could even help other underperformers like Khalil Shakir and the guy who I really don't like, Keon Coleman, and even Dalton Kincaid for that matter.
Yeah, I think if there's any sort of... if there's any sort of takeaway to get from this trade, it's that they don't have faith in the targets that they have right now. They brought in, so they went into this season with Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, and Curtis Samuel. Those were your top three wide receivers. And none of them have really proven to be a wide receiver one. Could things change? Yeah. Keon Coleman's still young, and Khalil Shakir is still pretty young himself. But they haven't shown it yet. And they clearly want to contend right now. This is Josh Allen's. This is 4 years of Josh Allen being a fully developed quarterback who has been a perennial Pro Bowl type talent. You're looking to contend for Super Bowls, not just have developmental years. So with that in mind, bringing in Amari Cooper just shows they don't have the faith that they should have in their wide receiver and core right now. A lot of them can be twos right now, but they don't have a one. And Amari Cooper, we know, can be that. It's all a matter of his age. If it turns out it was just the situation and Amari Cooper actually is still the player he has been his entire career, then the Bills are going to start cooking. Again, just like CJ just said, I still don't think this puts them quite over the hump. I still think they have other issues besides wide receiver one. Their defense, most notably, I don't think is all that good. Their offensive line has dipped in the last couple of weeks, which is pretty important. You've got to keep, no matter what targets you have, you have to keep your quarterback on his feet. Minimize the amount of pressure so that Allen can find those targets with Amari Cooper, Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman. He's not finding those guys if he has defenders in his face every other play. So I think that's all important. But I don't think this definitely helps them make more noise in the postseason. But I think there's better teams in the AFC this year.
I think that Josh Allen, like you mentioned the O-line. Yeah, the O-line is definitely dipped, but with the playmaking ability of Josh Allen, even on Showcase last night, you know, the way that Josh Allen plays, he is able to prevent being sacked. There was a lot of plays last night where he had to create plays with his legs and extend the pocket a little bit. And he was able to find a lot of open guys just off of extending the play a little bit. And if you're able to add Amari Cooper to the mix in doing so, it's definitely poses as a big threat at that point. But as you mentioned, though, that's only one side of the football. It's the defense has done what it can and has done well enough with the injuries that they have to mitigate for some of these wins and get them some wins. But they really need to start getting healthy, though.
Yeah, they definitely need to get healthy, but I mean, they lost a lot over the offseason.
They definitely have, but I think they still have some solid talent in general where the injury bug is hurting them a lot. But yeah, they have lost. They did lose some in the offseason, but it's not to say that they don't have the talent right now to kind of help mitigate that.
Yeah, so I agree they have good talent and they're good enough. Even before, I thought they were good enough to win the division and make the postseason, be a above 500 team. But my question to you is, how far do you think they're going with that?
It kind of depends at that point. I mean, if we're comparing defenses from this year to last year, it's definitely not as good of a defense, but it's definitely enough to get them to at least the divisional round like they did last year or maybe the championship. But they're going to have to really freaking put their foot down on, at that point.
Okay. So I think we're more on the same page on this.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe that they'll, I thought last year they were an AFC championship caliber team. That was their ceiling. I don't think it is this year, but I think they can make the divisional round. I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender. That's all I'm saying. I don't think they're a good team.
I don't think this is enough to make them a Super Bowl contender, but it makes them enough of a playoff threat.
Yeah. All right, we go from one AFC East trade to another, and we will move to the New York Jets, who made a move themselves. You talk about a team that is looking to win now, kind of like the Bills, except this Jets team has significantly more urgency than that Bills team does. That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. Adam Wright, Chris Kostich, Justin Tucker, and CJ Medeiros. So the Jets, they lost to the Bills on Monday Night Football, 23-20. It was a very close game. The refs did involve themselves pretty heavily in this matchup. We're not going to get into that. But what we will get into is right after this loss, the next morning, the Jets traded for Devontae Adams. They had been heavily linked in rumors to trade for Adams, with Aaron Rodgers being a former teammate of Adams. And last week, they just fired head coach Robert Saleh, and they demoted offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett. I think all of us on the show agreed that so far this season, the biggest issue for this team has not necessarily been personnel, but it's been coaching. Their coaching scheme has been terrible. And I've said it all season long, early in the early portion of this year. For you to have Aaron Rodgers, Garrett Wilson, Mike Williams, Breece Hall, a revamped offensive line, and be playing dink and dunk and be 2-4? That's football malpractice. And somebody had to get fired, and two guys did, basically. And what did they also do? They brought in another weapon, Davante Adams, who is formerly one of, if not the best wide receivers in the game for a few years' time. He's still a very good receiver right now. And him and Aaron Rodgers had a legendary rapport back during their days in Green Bay. It makes sense that they would bring this kid in. And I also think it makes sense that I respect the fact that this team was going all in going into this season. They're in win now mode. They've been making moves like a win now team. You don't play conservative with a quarterback who's 40 years old, a defense that's probably the best the Jets defense has been in a decade and a half, probably. And targets coming out of the ears and a revamped offensive line. This whole team is built to win right now, not in a few years, right now. So to bring in a new coaching scheme when this one isn't working, a new target to make sure that the coaching scheme executes well enough. I think I like this move a lot, and it kind of matches the urgency that the Jets have to win right now. So I respect it, but what do you guys think?
It's funny how this comes literally a week after the Saleh firing, and the Saleh firing was coming, but I don't think anyone really saw it coming that early. And like, you saw the way that the Jets played last night on offense. It was a lot better than what they had been performing in recent weeks, and definitely looked a lot better with Nathaniel Hackett not as the offensive play caller. It just feels a little sour that Saleh gets fired and now they're making all these moves, and it's like, well, what the hell? Like, now it's just like, obviously I was calling for Saleh's head, but there also comes to a point where things seem a little weird. Like, yeah, this is, as you said though, Adam, like, this is all in a win now mentality. They've stuck with this win now mentality, and if they went away from it at any moment, then they would be doing themselves a disservice. So all in all, this move is the right move to make if you're looking to be in win now right now. And news just came in that they're actually going to be restructuring Davante Adams' contract for this year, for the rest of this season, just for the, in terms of cap hit right now. And they'll just have to restructure it for 25-26 seasons. But that's something else. But I don't know. It definitely helps, but see how much it really does help.
I like the addition of Adams for Aaron Rodgers. They have a camaraderie. They know how to play together, and I think they'll be fine. I think the rest of the team is still a problem. I don't care how many times people tell me how revamped that line is. You saw the way Aaron Rodgers got hit yesterday? I'm sorry. It doesn't look good at all. I'm not impressed by them whatsoever. I don't know what happened to John Simpson and Morgan Moses, but they weren't playing like this when they were on the Ravens. They need to step it up in order to protect Aaron Rodgers. They don't have Lamar Jackson who can escape to protect them. Aaron Rodgers is just coming off an ACL injury. He's not as mobile as he once was. You need to be able to protect Aaron Rodgers, because without him, your season's done. And so, all in all, I do like the Davante Adams pickup, because now he has more weapons instead of just Allen Lazard and Garrett Wilson. They do have a true number one, even though I do think Garrett Wilson has number one potential. Now they have two number ones on the outside. They have Lazard on the inside. They have Breece Hall as a running back. They do have weapons. I think it's just a matter of, can they keep Aaron Rodgers upright in time for him to get it to his weapons? And can their kicker make actual field goals when needed to? But outside of that, I don't think they're that bad. They shouldn't be 2-4. They shouldn't be 2-4. They should be above 500 right now. But due to mishaps, miscommunications, and unfortunate things, and just a bad old line, that's where they're at. But all in all, I think this is a good pickup for them. I think this is good for the Jets, and I think this is a good thing moving forward.
I think the O-line, you make a good point, talk about the O-line, because Rodgers is taking some tough hits last night. Like, it's one thing if you're getting sacked, but like the way he was getting driven into the ground was troublesome.
I don't know who number 77 was, but AJ Epinesa went around him and drove into Aaron Rodgers like it was nothing.
Off the top of my head, isn't that Tyron Smith?
I think so. And he got abused.
He's supposed to be their top lineman, too.
He's
also ancient. You got to remember that.
Yeah, it's Tyron Smith. They're blindside tackle to really hammer the point in.
Well, but Aaron Rodgers did get blindsided, all right.
Yep.
So for me, when I look at the Jets, Adam said it best, I think. They're in win now mode. Because, you know what, I'm going to stick to the extremes here. After this year, after this season, nothing is a given. Honest to God, realistically, you probably have, if you're lucky, one more year. Because I'm sorry, Rodgers does not look good. He does not. He is a shell of what he once was. He's a game manager, a good game manager. And, you know, he threw a Hail Mary so that all the people go, oh, my God, a Hail Mary. Like, that's not luck-based, but whatever. Like, so he did that, and everyone's just going to forget the fact that he's been playing terribly. The line is terrible, and you're probably going to need a new you're going to need a new head coach in the offseason because Jeff Ulbrich, I don't think he's that guy, especially after losing to Buffalo like that. It was just an ugly game. It was a winnable game for the Jets, but – They blew another one. And this is another team that just wails on bad teams. And when they have to play anybody remotely respectable, they just curl up into a ball and die. And the Devontae Adams trade, on paper, it's good. However, I do have a warning for the Jets. Rodgers and Adams have chemistry. And honest to God, I think that's a double-edged sword. Because I can see, and I think if you all know ball, which I know you all do, you can see it too. I can envision a future, a not too distant future, where Rodgers is just going to chuck all logic into the wind and force feed Devontae Adams. And you and I both know Rodgers is temperamental. He has quickly approach diva status, and he has this air of, I don't need to practice, I don't need to listen to anyone, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And let me tell you something, you know what he's going to do? He's going to force that ball to Adams. And will it piss off people like Garrett Wilson? Probably. And will it piss off even his other buddies like Alan Lazard? Mm-hmm. And guess what? I've also seen reports that they're probably going to end up trading Mike Williams, you know, because now there's too many mouths to feed. And just looking at this, I think this is a lot of a higher risk than most people are willing to admit. Because be honest, just real quick, yes or no, can you envision game on the line and Rodgers will throw out the game plan to just force feed Adams? Because honest to God, I can see that. Yes,
it would be the trustworthy thing of Adams to throw it to your best guy, though. I mean, Adams is considerably probably the best target that the Jets have right now.
Well, yeah, I know, but I could just see Rodgers force feeding him the ball, but he's not supposed to. Like, Adams is in double coverage, just gonna be like, ah, screw it, Adams is down there somewhere.
Yeah,
and I think with Rodgers, you know, marching the beat of your own drum is fine, but when it gets to the point where Rodgers, who already has problems with being uncoachable, that carries a lot of risk. But just on paper, I think it's really good, and Adams should make a good impact. And like I said, between this year and next for the Jets, if you want to break that curse, you finally want to get over the hump and win the big one, it's literally now or never.
To build off of that, CJ, too, Aaron Rodgers was just on the Pat McAfee show calling out Mike Williams for running the wrong route on the game-sealing interception. Last night, which
what a leader.
And yeah.
I mean,
they were talking
this one thing,
one person at a time.
I'm just saying, like, Yeah. Wow. What a leader. Real nice. Sure to inspire a lot of confidence. Also, on a semi-unrelated note, whenever Rogers on the McAfee show, just don't listen to him. Because this man is a professional liar. Like, remember he said last week about Sala? I was blindsided by this. I didn't know he was going to get fired. They didn't run it by me. And he's like, I didn't know. I had no idea. Yeah. Sure you didn't. Because we all know that's a lie. And hell, it's when Rogers says, I mean, when you heard Rogers answer that question, it was like watching someone lie to a judge when they say, oh, I had no idea this was going to happen. Like, come on. So Rogers is going on McAfee. Every time he goes on to build on your point, Chris, I like him less and less because it gets to the point where he's just blatantly lying. He's calling out his own teammates. And yeah, so now he's got a friend where he can just play with and leave everybody else to go rot.
The point that I wanted to build on off of the Mike Williams thing on the McAfee show, though, is that like throughout the broadcast, they were talking about how Mike Williams was still trying to get on the good side of Rogers. And it's like, I mean, if you're not getting it figured out at this point of the season, then you're not going to get involved into the offense at all, which sucks because Mike Williams is a pretty good wide receiver in his own right, at least in his time in LA. So probably going to have to force feed it to Davante Adams. Probably going to have to.
Yeah, because if you just don't know the offense, I don't know what you want Aaron Rodgers to do here.
Yeah.
If he keeps throwing him the ball and he's running the wrong routes and they turn into interceptions and Rodgers isn't in control of that, I don't know what else he can do.
How true is that? You know, I'm going to be that guy. How true is that? Because it's certainly not like Aaron Rodgers to lie. Honest to God, I wouldn't be shocked if that wasn't true because Rodgers is a man-child who can't admit any mistakes.
I guess we'll see if Mike Williams owns up to it then, if he does, if they ask him.
But I'm not counting it out. I'm just saying that I don't think Rodgers is above throwing people under the bus to make himself look better. In fact, I know he's not.
No, but I don't think that, like, I think to the levels that Ben Roethlisberger did it, I think that this is like definitely not to the levels that Big Ben was doing it at one point or another.
I'm going to jump in. You're not going to get any disagreement from me on Rodgers' attitude. We all know how he is. We all know that he has a little bit of an ego to him.
A little bit.
To say the least.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that he was doing a lot of the same things in Green Bay and they were still winning games. As long as he's winning, then it doesn't matter. Now the Jets need to start winning or else this is going to be amplified more and more and more. And it's going to become more apparent, but winning is the best deodorant, which is why you didn't hear about it quite as much in Green Bay. You were hearing, you know, Rodgers was on the Pat McAfee show when he was in Green Bay a lot too. Remember when he said, well, I threw a wrench in the machine when I won MVP. This was supposed to be the plan. They were going to move on from me, and then I won MVP, and it ruined everything. Like, it's like, dude, okay, we got it. We know you can play, and if Green Bay decides they want to move on from you, that's kind of private stuff. Like, that's the business side of football. They're trying to do what's best for the organization and its future. And if that means moving on from you after 15 years with the team, then, I mean, they might have to do that. In fact, it sounds like they didn't do it soon enough with your attitude. My point is, they were winning games, so it wasn't quite as apparent. They had won 13 games for 3 years in a row. He won back-to-back MVPs. So if Rodgers does that with the Jets, then that's pretty good. And it doesn't matter what he says on the Pat McAfee show, which wide receivers he's calling out. Winning is the best deodorant. Problem is they're not winning right now. But if they start doing that, then I don't care what he says on Pat McAfee. I really don't.
That's a pretty big if, isn't it? Like it's just, I don't know.
I wouldn't say it's too big of an if just because it's still early in the season. 2-4, you can kind of come back from. if the Jets turn it on, if they turn on the Jets and they start winning more, then, I mean, with Aaron Rodgers, Garrett Wilson, Davante Adams, if Mike Williams stays on the team, then it's going to be hard for them to lose games. I think if they can just find a groove, if this team can just gel with the personnel it has, it's going to be hard to beat them. The problem is they need to start winning. But once they do, I think they can easily find that groove and start really winning, and they could finish 11-6, maybe even 12-5 at the very best. But they need to start winning.
I think they are moving in the right direction, though, in terms of that. Like, even based off of last night, Rodgers getting sacked a lot, but they were moving the ball a lot more effectively than what they had the last few weeks. So you know that they're already moving in the right direction. So now they just have to just keep going at this point.
They need to get going. We can all agree with that. They haven't been playing their best ball. I'm just saying that they have potential to be much better than they are, especially now that they just got Davante Adams. Yeah. Rodgers, as far as physical abilities go, he doesn't look that old. And as far as their talent goes, players for him to throw to, players on the line, they have everything they need. They just need to put it all together. And it's taking them a very long time to gel. But it's still early, so let's give them some time and let's see how it goes. If not, they may be in some trouble. But we do need to move on. Our Fumble Rooski game of the week, the game that we picked, did not end in the best matchup. The Lions destroyed the Cowboys 47-9. We're going to get into all the ins and outs of that game, what it means for the Cowboys and what it means for the Lions, even after a huge loss on defense. That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright with Chris Kostich, Justin Tucker, and CJ Medeiros. All right, so the Lions put an absolute beatdown on the Cowboys. In fact, the Cowboys had literally one lead. They were up 3-0 in the beginning of the first quarter. It was all Lions after that. The Lions won 47-9. Jared Goff went 18 for 25. 315 yards and 3 touchdowns. They had four different receivers who eclipsed 50 yards. They spread the wealth a lot. 3 different touchdown passes. One of them was to Jameson Williams. Another was to Sam Laporta. Another was to Amon-Ra St. Brown. Tim Patrick had 68 yards of offense. Khalif Raymond had 73. We've talked about this a lot. This is a team with lots of weapons. If you contain one aspect of their offense, then they exploit others. Jahmyr Gibbs was still really good. 12 carries, 63 yards. He averaged 5.3 yards a carry. He had 3 catches for 28 yards. David Montgomery was the star of the backfield rushing-wise. He had 12 carries for 80 yards, 2 touchdowns. This Lions offense, I mean, we've said it a lot. It's a well-oiled machine. They have the best line in the league. Jared Goff is well-protected, and he's taking advantage of every bit of it. I mean, this is a really, really good Lions team. And the only red flag that we have pointed out so far this season is that the defense hasn't gelled yet. That's the point I'm going to get to. Aiden Hutchinson, their best defensive player, he was a early defensive player of the year candidate, snapped his leg. And if you saw replays, it was quite gruesome. As of right now, it's a tibia snap. It was a clean break. And expectation is obviously he's done for the year. They still will have a solid defense, but I think their ceiling for how great this defense can be has come down significantly. They don't have that superstar player there anymore, which will become a problem, but they still have a, I still think they have a solid defense. As for Dallas, The sky is falling right now. They are 3-3. I think the only thing they have going for them is that they are in a pretty reasonably easy division. The Eagles don't look very good either. The Giants are still a joke. And the Commanders are young. They look like the best so far, but they're a young team. And they need to move on from McCarthy. But guys, your thoughts?
Yeah, this was, in terms of a statement win, this is an overstatement win for the Lions. They came in here to prove a point. Never mind that they beat the Cowboys 47-9. They embarrassed, disrespected the Cowboys 47-9. Running trick plays while up by a billion, having Penei Sewell out on hook and ladders, Taylor Decker out there split out as the X just on a random plays, also throwing it to him in the end zone. If he caught one in the end zone, that would have really put the icing on the cake. Everything that the Lions did in this game was to basically prove a point from last season, essentially. From the matchup last season, it's insane. And the only downside is that they lose Aiden Hutchinson and probably Carlton Davis for a week or two as well, because Carlton Davis got kicked in the head. You guys see that one? Like, literally a play or two later, Carlton Davis losing his helmet and then just taking a heel right to this freaking temple. Ugh, that was bad. But yeah, losing the heart and soul of your defense, would have potentially been defensive player of the year, is just terrible, especially for a defense that was still trying to kind of find its way. But we'll see how it goes for them. This is probably the best offense in the league, so that may be enough to kind of catapult them into an NFC championship. But it's always tough when you lose the heart and soul of your team right there. The Cowboys, they're just so bad. I think it's safe to say the Cowboys are bad. I know that they're missing DeMarcus Lawrence and Micah Parsons, Brandon Cooks as well. But like, I don't know how much it would have helped in preventing the Lions from putting up 47 points. Dak,
your defense looks awful.
Yeah. I just don't understand how Dak Prescott goes from looking like a top five quarterback in the league one game and then looking like a worse version of Daniel Jones the next week. It's terrible. On Jerry Jones's birthday, by the way. On Jerry Jones's birthday.
I love how they kept going to him, too.
Yeah.
On every shot where the Lions scored, you could just see him just down in the dumps. Because this Cowboys team just looks...
it's terrible.
This is the worst it's looked in a very long time.
Yeah.
You know how disrespectful you have to be to do a hook and lateral to your right tackle when it almost beat... That is so disrespectful. They knew exactly what they were doing. They
had Penei Sewell running routes too.
Yes.
Yeah.
They suck. And they allowed Detroit to get away with this. Whatever Detroit wanted, they got. Detroit wanted to run the ball, they ran the ball. I think like David Montgomery averaged like 7.7 yards per carry. And I was like, y'all can't stop him. If they want to pass, they pass. Jared Goff had a field day. If they want to score a touchdown, they score. If they want to play around with y'all, they'll play around with y'all. Give Amon-Ra St. Brown the ball. Give him the ball. And, like, there's nothing. Oh, J-Mo for a wide-open touchdown. They got it. Whatever they wanted, they just put their will against the Cowboys and did whatever they wanted and smacked them around like they was a stepchild. I don't even know what to say. The Cowboys absolutely suck. Dak Prescott, boy, I tell you, I don't understand why Jerry keeps paying this guy when he plays like this. Every now and then, he'll have a game that makes you think, oh, my God, he actually might be a top 10, top 5 type of player. Then he'll have a game like this, and it makes you really question, why is he still the Cowboys quarterback? I don't understand what's happened to the Dallas Cowboys O-line. It's worse than the Jets. It's horrible. It's bad. They can't get anything going on the ground game, which means you're too reliant with Dak Prescott with the pass. And when you're too reliant with Dak with the pass, this is the results you'll get. 4 interceptions is ridiculous. CD Lamb is too pissed off to care. I'm like, this team is just an abomination. I knew Detroit was going to win, but I at least thought like Dallas would put up some type of a fight. This wasn't a fight. This was no mas, and they couldn't do anything about it. And the thing is, Dallas Cowboys were coming out in the beginning of the game fighting. They gave a big play to CeeDee Lamb. I'm like, okay, Dallas, here they come. They actually might do something with this game. No, false hope. False hope with the beginning drive. And then that Khalil Turpin big run kickoff return. Outside of that, they didn't really do much of anything. Detroit proved to you why Detroit is a candidate to go to the Super Bowl, and Dallas looks like a team that's going to miss the playoffs. They look ridiculous right now.
You hear about a lot of teams, or rather, you hear a lot about a lot of players who go to new teams and they have revenge games. If there was ever a team that would have a revenge game, it was this one after that controversial loss to the Cowboys last year. CJ?
Ho-ho! Dallas, sit down. I need to tell you something. You... To say you got humiliated is an understatement. You got disrespected. When they're throwing the ball to Taylor Decker, when they're running hook and ladder plays with Penei Sewell, when they have Dan Skipper lined out wide, that Lions team spat in your face and said point blank, I don't respect you. That's really what they said. They were literally laughing at you. They're literally bringing out like the trickiest of trick plays, the craftiest of gadget plays just to screw with you. And you just laid there and took it. That was just abysmal. And on a side note, I do want to mention this. If you go on Instagram, you have Cowboys fans doing normal Cowboys fan things. They cry, they whine. They're like, we had 6 starters missing on defense. If our defense is healthy, we win. And I'm like, okay, does Trayvon Diggs play offense? Does Michael Parsons play offense? DeMarcus Lawrence, he play offense? So you explain to me why your defense being banged up, which I will say is true, magically hurts your offense. So your defense being hurt kept your offense from scoring one singular touchdown the entire game. You did not get into the end zone. Your star wide receiver, CeeDee Lamb, is openly fighting with Dak Prescott. They've been disjointed the whole year. Mike McCarthy is in way over his head. We knew this from day one. I mean, it's just, he will be fired at some point. I know it's very unlike Jerry, but I would not be shocked if he doesn't make it the rest of the year. That was embarrassing. And don't forget, you think of yourselves as contenders. Injuries or not, to only put up 9, that's just inexcusable. And like I said, you can blame the injuries to your defense all you want, but like I said, an injured defense does not hurt the offense. An injured offense can hurt the defense, but not vice versa. You know what I mean? That I cannot stress enough, that had no bearing on your offensive performance. So before you blame injuries, I just got to say, no, Cowboys fans, just no, Cowboys fans. You cannot touch a contending team. They're not beating contenders. So put the excuses down, because this – how many contenders have they actually beaten? Really stop and think. They haven't. They're just another team that just grossly underperforms. They have to play anyone good. And then there's the Lions. Oh my God, if there was ever a statement win, you got it. These guys, this was them going up and slaying their demons. You know, they broke the curse. They hadn't beaten Dallas in years. Like I said, they broke the curse. They beat their demons, and they just said, hey, NFL, we are for real. We know we're probably in one of, if not the toughest division in football, because, you know, the entire NFC North, I believe, is above 500.
Yeah.
And they're saying, we're for real. Forget the Packers getting Jordan Love back. Forget the Bears going on a tear. Forget the undefeated Vikings. We're the top dogs here, and I can't wait to see what they do in the coming weeks. Losing Aiden Hutchinson's going to suck, though. It's too early to tell how much of an impact that's going to have on their defense, because, to be fair, it is one guy, but when it's also the glue guy of your defense, that's bad. So they might just take a step back. They might regress mightily, but call me a cockeyed optimist, but I would say, yeah, Adam, I see your face. Calm down. That's a term. That's a term which you would know if you were well read, but you're not. No, I'm kidding. I'm playing with you. So
fuck up.
How's, you know, I'm not gonna finish that.
I'm kidding. Yeah, just keep going.
I was just gonna say, you made me lose my train of thought. But long story short, I don't see it impacting them that much. It's gonna suck, but I'm not expecting the wheels to fall off.
Losing Aiden Hutchinson kind of that hurt him a lot. And I believed that this defense had a lot more potential than it had been playing to, and that potential went way down. It still has a chance to be pretty good, but their pass rush is significantly worse now. In fact, this is now a candidate to potentially trade at the deadline for a pass rusher. And that's something we could get into when the deadline comes a little closer. But this is a team that, I mean, they have all of the other pieces in place. I wouldn't be surprised if they made a trade. As far as the division goes, I know they're 4-1 and the Vikings are 5-0, but I still believe the Lions are the best team in this division. I know Sam Darnold is playing really well, but there's been a few teams that have missed the playoffs. I'm not saying this team's going to miss the playoffs. There's been a few 5-0 teams that have missed the playoffs, especially in recent memory, and two of those teams were Vikings. So I just don't believe in the Vikings just yet. And the Lions, they have a proven quarterback who's been on contending teams before. The Lions have plenty of personnel. The Vikings do too, but I just don't believe in Sam Darnold just yet. Also, I'm upset that they changed the goalposts for comeback player of the year. Sam Darnold is now, he cannot make comeback player of the year, which angers me a lot because he's playing really well. Still, I think this is the best team in the division, and I genuinely do not think it's close.
Yeah, I'd agree.
All right. We're going to move on. And for this next topic, I'd say I'm pretty excited to get on this one. And as Patriots fans, I think three of the four of us are, rookie quarterbacks had quite an impressive showing all around the league this year, rather this week. And we're going to get into that and kind of give an update on how this rookie class has been going. That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright, Chris Kostich, Justin Tucker, CJ Medeiros. So before this season started, we had a segment on the show where we talked about the 6 rookies who were taken in the first round as far as quarterbacks go, and we compared it to past rookie classes that had a lot of success, most notably the 1984 class and the 2020 class, and how this thing could potentially stack up. And I'm not jumping to any conclusions. In fact, I'm far from it. We're just giving an update on the progress. This is how it went on week six. In London, Caleb Williams went 23 for 29, 226 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 1 interception. Jaden Daniels went 24 for 35, 269 yards, and 2 touchdowns against Baltimore. Drake May went 20 for 33, 243 yards, 3 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. He did turn the ball over a total 3 times. Bo Nix, 19 for 33, 216 yards, 2 touchdowns to 1 interception. And two first rounders who are yet to even play. J.J. McCarthy for obvious reasons. And Michael Penix, who is sitting behind a quarterback who was just given a 4-year, $180 million deal. Mm-hmm. Guys, this is, I mean, if this all holds, this has to be a historic draft class. If these quarterbacks all pan out, we still haven't seen anything from J.J. McCarthy or Michael Penix. But even if they don't pan out, if this is what we have, Williams, Daniels, May, and Nix, then this is a historically great draft class. And we are seeing, I think we can already come to the conclusion that this is the best rookie class, the best the rookies in their rookie years have performed that we've ever seen. We never see this from rookie quarterbacks, at least not the plural form. We see it every year. Every once in a while, you'll see one or two who have really good years. We haven't seen four who have all come out and just blew us all away. And I'm pretty excited for the future of this league, especially since the Patriots have one of them. Guys, what are your thoughts?
They're playing extremely well right now. And it took Caleb Williams a few games. Same thing with Jaden Daniels, but Jaden Daniels, I feel like, has performed like he's the best rookie quarterback right now. And Caleb Williams is starting to find his groove finally via this past game against in London. And Drake May getting his first start, having the only rookie quarterback in his starting debut to have a touchdown in their starting debut of this class. So Drake May looked really impressive despite the turnovers. Caleb Williams figuring out. Jaden Daniels been playing at a rookie of the year level type of beat right now. Bo Nix is kind of a weird one. He's kind of figuring out, but it's Bo Nix. I feel like that if he was all that, then Cortland Sutton would be going off right now. But
jury's still out on Nix.
Yeah, jury's still out on Nix. I think that the way that Nix is playing, he has the potential to potentially be something maybe, but I'd love to see Cortland Sutton get some more targets if that's going to be the case. Because if Bo Nix is going to be like that, Cortland Sutton and this Nix and Sutton connection could be very dangerous. But that's if Nix pans out the way that he should. All in all, in terms of historically good draft class, obviously it's a little soon. But
very soon.
Very, very soon. But, I mean, the way that they're performing definitely gives off that type of vibe, especially where both teams – especially looking at Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, where they both teams are at right now. Commanders are 4-2. Bears are 4-2. Looking at a potential playoff spot. The only thing for the Bears, I would say, is that all four of their wins have come against losing teams. So there's kind of this – I don't really know what to expect for the rest of the year, I guess.
One last part. So did the Commanders.
Yeah, and the Commanders.
When I look at this quarterback draft class, I will admit it is very impressive. I was trying to compare it with the recent ones with 2021, 2020, and 2018. I think they edge out 2018 by a little bit. To start off their careers, Jaden Daniels was playing phenomenal. Caleb Williams is finding his footing. I wasn't really worried, but I'm happy that he's finally finding his footing and playing the way he should be as the franchise quarterback for Chicago. I feel like Bo Nix is surprising me much more than I gave him credit for. And then Drake May showed up, and he's playing, but again, I didn't expect much out of him, but he played better than expected considering he was going up against Houston and his O-line is horrible. I thought he played much better than people were giving him credit for. So overall, in comparison to the 2018 class, I do have to admit it might be better as a rookie class overall, because I don't think I've ever personally seen a group of guys play this well overall. Now, will they live up to the 2018 potential? We'll see. But right now, they're looking pretty darn good, I will admit. So I like what I'm seeing out of all of them, but the future still holds.
Yeah, this rookie class has beaten, I would say, a lot of expectations. Keep in mind, we haven't seen Penix yet. We haven't seen McCarthy. So obviously, yeah, either way, for most of these guys, jury's still out. I would say Caleb Williams, after a really just rough start to the year, he looks to have turned it around. He's finding his groove. Jaden Daniels, like I think Adam said, is probably, or maybe it was Chris, I don't know.
Chris said is
the best quarterback in this draft thus far. Thus far, it's obviously tiniest of sample sizes, but he's on the fast track to an offensive rookie of the year. Bo Nix has been serviceable. I mean, in the games where he's done enough to not screw up and just been a game manager, he has been actually pretty solid. And Drake May just started, like you all mentioned, was the only quarterback to throw a touchdown in his debut. He had three turnovers on the day. To be fair, you could argue two weren't his fault. One was a tipped ball at the line that resulted in a circus catch interception, which you can't blame him. It was a tipped ball. That was a good read, just, you know. Mm-hmm. And the other one was a blindside hit that caused a fumble because I believe it was Daniil Hunter came through completely unblocked. And then there was one where May just made a good read but kind of sailed the ball. But once again, three touchdowns in his debut, 60% completion percentage. That's great. And it is truly what we will say is a beacon of hope for this Patriots team. But overall, May's great, not great, but better than what any of us expected, performance aside. This rookie QB class, I respectfully got to disagree with Tuck. That, I mean, I know it had Baker Mayfield in it, and you don't like, you know.
You know why he's comparing it to 2018. It's because Lamar Jackson was
in it.
And I know you're an NFC North fan. You don't like Baker, but you love Lamar. We get it. We do. It's okay. Still our favorite Ravens fan. You are. It's okay. We love Justin. We love Adam.
I said this one was better.
Uh-huh. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, I said this one is better right now, all things considered.
Probably just because he was on the Browns, but I'm playing with you. I'm playing with you, Tuck. Come on. But all jokes aside, seriously though, I don't know if they're quite on the 2018 level yet, but oh my god, do they have the potential to be? Once again, incredibly small sample size, but at least Williams, Daniels, and May, you know, the top three picks, have shown some real flashes. Nix has been consistent. But if they keep this up, I really think the future of the league's in great hands. Mm-hmm.
The only thing I will argue on is that I don't think Jaden Daniels is on the fast track to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, because I think it's quickly turning into a two-horse race. Caleb Williams had a very, very slow start to the season. I am not arguing that in the slightest. But I think Williams has been trusted a little more to lead the offense in a passing manner. I'm not saying Jaden Daniels can't pass. He has shown incredible abilities to throw the ball. He's made some great throws. But so is Caleb Williams. And he's been trusted to do it a lot more. They have opened the playbook a lot more for him, which is why I believe that he had a slow start. And he's also quickly learned how to deal with it. In the last three games, he has a 7-1 touchdown to interception ratio. And during that time, he has a passer rating above 80%. I think he has finally figured it out. He's turned a corner. He has gotten better every week since starting week one. And I strongly believe whoever wins this upcoming game between Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Bears, Commanders, whoever wins this game, I think has the better shot at winning Offensive Rookie of the Year. It's so early that this game can be a pivotal point in how this race really goes for Offensive Rookie of the Year. And everyone has a bad taste in their mouths from seeing Caleb Williams in the first few games. In the last few, I think it has overshadowed it so much that if it continues the rest of the year, no one's going to remember that Caleb Williams had a rough start to the season. And I'm not saying that Jaden Daniels can't play. Jaden Daniels is going to be one of the better young quarterbacks in the league. But I don't think the race is over for Rookie of the Year. I don't. I think Caleb Williams makes a strong chance, makes a strong argument for it. It's going to be a two-horse race the rest of the way. Looking at the other two rookie quarterbacks who are starting, Drake May and Bo Nix, May is starting too late. And even if he did start most of the year, I don't think he'd be in the race just because the team around him sucks. And I think that matters. Bo Nix is probably the least furthest along among all the quarterbacks starting. He's shown something, and I think I've been very encouraged by his development. But I think his best ball is ahead of him. So when it comes down to it, this is going to be a race between Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels for who is the best rookie. And I think this upcoming matchup is going to be indicative of that.
I say I full-heartedly agree with you there, Adam. I just think that Jaden Daniels compared to Caleb Williams right now, like, I think that if we're going to look at this Rookie of the Year race, I feel like that what they should do is look at the entire year as a whole. Like, Jaden Daniels hasn't had that big struggle that Caleb Williams had in the first few weeks of the season. And when you look at the way that Jaden Daniels is being used, it's more than just passing. He's also rushing the ball a lot right now. Like, if you were to look at rushing stats amongst quarterbacks, so number one is Lamar. And number two is Jaden Daniels at over 300 rushing yards, almost has as many as Brian Robinson, who leads the team in rushing. And I know that obviously those stats don't say everything because Caleb Williams does rush the ball when he needs to. And in fact, 4 carries for over 50 yards for him in London this past week. So, like, obviously Caleb Williams is a very good rusher in his own right. But that's not what he's being used for. And so I think that when you look at it as a whole, if Jaden Daniels can stay away from having a cold stretch and produce better numbers than Caleb Williams the rest of the way, he's going to end up winning it altogether. And I could also see a scenario where Caleb Williams does beat him out in terms of passing. But that's probably going to end up being because Jaden Daniels is getting all these rushing opportunities. Obviously, that's kind of just throwing that out there as kind of a think about it type of thing. But I don't know.
I compare Jaden Daniels' rookie year closer to Lamar Jackson as a rookie than I do to any pass heavy quarterback. He's had a better start because the Commanders have been a lot more conservative with how they have used him. He's being more run heavy because that's a more dumbed down playbook. He doesn't have to find the open receiver as much with Caleb Williams.
We talked about this a couple weeks ago too. Yeah.
Caleb has thrown the ball 200 times this year. Jaden Daniels, 166. So they have trusted Caleb more and more often earlier this season to play than Jaden Daniels. That's not a knock on Daniels, because most quarterbacks are like that, especially as rookies. But I'm just saying a big reason why he has been as solid as he has been without many hiccups is because they're protecting him more. They're not throwing him in the deep end without his floaties like the Bears are. Only thing is, the Caleb Williams is learning how to swim now, which is why I think Caleb Williams is quickly becoming more polished as a passer than Daniels is. And Who ends up being the better quarterback, I don't know. But I just think it's a lot closer than you think when you look at it right now. Not based on how Caleb Williams started, but based on how it looks, Caleb has made a lot of improvement. And I think as of right now, because he had such a rough start and had a lot to figure out, I think he has figured things out more, and he's more of a polished passer than Daniels is. He's more trusted to throw the ball, as the Bears have demonstrated. Daniels can make amazing throws, but we need to see it more. I want to see him throw the ball more, and I think he can do it. But all I'm saying is this race is a lot closer than you think it is.
I could see that. No, I think that Caleb Williams definitely closed it in. That's for sure. I think that you bring up the way that they're used. Yeah, you bring up the way that both offenses are being run. Commanders are obviously more conservative, and we've talked about this. We talked about this a couple weeks ago with how they're running it. It's more spread out, kind of like a college-style offense, so that it's easier for Daniels to kind of get himself equipped into the NFL scene and spreading out the defense, thinning him out over the middle. It's that type of thing. So, yeah, your point stands on that. Well, I don't know if that's really going to end up mattering in terms of how they're used is going to translate to – well, obviously how they're used is translate to the stats, but I don't know if that's going to matter a ton when it comes down to the voting process.
Yeah, so it's – we have a lot of football left to be played. And
exactly.
I strongly believe that this is going to be a pivotal point up this upcoming week between the two on how things go.
Is it this week or the week after?
It's this week. Yep.
This week? I thought you said it was week 8.
I don't believe so. No.
No, Commanders are playing the Panthers this week, and it's week 8 is what you were talking about.
Week 7.
Yeah, yeah, week 8.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Upcoming week, that's what I meant. Yeah. So I believe that week is going to be very indicative on how that race is going to go. And as this season goes on, we're going to see a lot of improvement from both quarterbacks. It could be a tight race at the end of the season because they're just both playing very good ball. In their own ways, they're both kicking ass. And I hope it continues that way. I hope Drake May continues to improve. I hope Bo Nix is hitting his stride by the end of the season. I don't think he will until next year if he does, but this is a very promising rookie class, and we're still missing two first-round rookies who are supposed to make their debuts in the next coming years. Who the hell knows what the Falcons are going to do with Penix, but God, that was such a disgrace, taking two quarterbacks. You took one in free agency, spent through your teeth for him, and then you used a top 10 pick on another quarterback who was such a joke. All right, we're going to go on to our final segment, which is our weekly week 6 top 3 bottom 3. That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright with Chris Costas, Justin Tucker, and CJ Medeiros. We are on to top 3, bottom 3. So our best and worst individual performances for week 6. So Chris, take it away.
Top 3, bottom 3. This week was a little harder to kind of gauge which teams deserve to be on the list, but I mean, this one right off the bat, the Detroit Lions, it's pretty obvious that the Lions are going to be the first team on the list here. It's just 47-9 beat down. The way that they did it and how much of a overstatement win that this was deserves to be on the list. And right off the bat, bottom 3, Cowboys. I mean, they're just so bad. They're so bad. And that's pretty easy to kind of get at or kind of say now that we've, after discussing the Ruski game of the week at that point. So, yeah. Moving on, 49ers getting the win over the Seahawks on Thursday night last week. And I mean, Geno Smith had a good game. And the biggest thing is that you get a divisional win on the road, and the Niners breaking their winning or their losing streak as well. It's a little like three losses out of their last four games prior to going into that. So getting themselves back into 500, getting on the right track. And getting back on the right track as well, the Buffalo Bills. And you could spin it as well that they get the win last night, break their two-game losing streak, and today they acquire Amari Cooper. Finish out the bottom three, the Giants, only putting up 7 points on a pretty bad Bengals team on Sunday Night Football. And the defense played pretty well as well. I mean, the Giants defense is pretty underrated. This D-line is pretty good, and they showed that they're able to stop the run for the most part, and they had their chances, but they just squandered so many chances away in that game that they really just shot themselves in the foot over and over and over again, which sounds pretty familiar for how the Giants play football. Last team on the list, the Raiders. Last team on the bottom three, losing 32-13 against the Steelers. And it all stems from, you know, naming Aiden O'Connell as your starting quarterback, Davante Adams being hurt, then you trade him. The Raiders are a major malfunction right now, that is for sure. And it's starting to ponder on me if Antonio Pierce is even a good coach. That might be up for discussion right now. Or are the Raiders just that much of a dysfunction in general?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because like I feel like Antonio
day right there.
I feel like this guy is a really good win now coach. If the roster is ready to compete, then this is a guy for you. It just feels like the Raiders are so far away from contention that he's not the coach for that. If he was the head coach of, let's say, the Buffalo Bills, if he was the coach of the Lions, the Houston Texans, it would be a good fit. But the problem is this team is far from it. I think the roster knows it. And I think with that in mind, I guess he's just not a good fit. And I think part of that is the Raiders organization, because even in a rebuild, you should not have players with this kind of attitude, issue. You should be cutting Jack Jones, not keeping him on your roster. Same with a couple other players.
Yeah, it's interesting because I like the fact that Antonio Pierce is trying to hold his players accountable, but it's weird that it's coming off so negatively, seemingly, from the players. I don't know what it is. Like, you want a heart. Like, Antonio Pierce is a hard-headed coach that doesn't take any bullshit. And the Raiders players loved him last year, and then all of a sudden this year, it just, like, how are you making business decisions for a coach like Antonio Pierce after the way everything ended last year? It's weird. It's very weird to me.
Yeah, I don't understand certain decisions that are being made by either players or coaches. But after last year, I thought this was a turning of a new tide, because when Antonio Pierce got in there, they looked like a competent football team. Now, all of a sudden, they look this bad and people are making business decisions. I don't know what to say. And now Davante Adams is gone, and now you have to worry about if Max Crosby is next, even though he says he wants to be there. You got to worry about that. I'm worried about the Las Vegas Raiders right now.
Yeah.
I feel so stupid, honest to God I do, because I said how because last year he was a good coach, right? That's what he was. We all knew it. Yeah. And I said the Raiders shouldn't repeat that same mistake that they did with Rich Bisaccia. And they did, and I said, oh, hey, you made a good coach, but it's looking incredibly likely that Antonio Pierce was just a flash in the pan and nothing more. And honestly, one of the things people don't talk about when being a head coach is that you have to be an adult. You need to be the adult in the room. And I'm just going to say it. I don't think Pierce has been that. He's calling out his players. He's, oh, we're going to make some business decisions of our own. Seems like every decision that he's made has been made out of pettiness. He's a little man. That's what he is. You got to be the bigger person. He's not. He's a little man. He's a petty man. And I'm sorry, and I know it's not been confirmed, but I think that the Davante Adams injury was overblown. I really do. I think that was more of an informal benching. And apparently I'm not alone. A lot of people don't think that, and that's okay. They're allowed to not think that. But I'm just saying I wouldn't put it past Pierce, you know, someone who like outright calls out his own players. And let's be real. He's lost the locker room. And the only reason I want to point out that I say that I think it was more of an informal benching than a hamstring or a quad or whatever happened to Adams is because it was around that time where he started losing the locker room. After Adams stopped playing, the locker room started going against him, which I think really fuels the whole, okay, so maybe the boys in the locker room obviously know something we don't. But, yeah, Raiders have earned their bottom three at this point. I think you're playing – I mean, Pierce would never admit this, but I think you're playing for a pick. Everybody else on top three, bottom three, put pretty self-explanatory. We've talked the Lions and the Cowboys to death. The Giants have a slept on defense, but good God, Daniel Jones is terrible. Not to mention deciding to take the points, right? Because here's the thing, right? People are going to say, hey, you know, you should go for a touchdown. But don't get it twisted. You're going to have to do an onside kick either way.
It's a great call.
You at least great call. Exactly. You take what's in your hip pocket, and your kicker just decided that he wanted to take the day off. He missed two picks in that game, didn't he?
Who? Oh, yeah. No, I'm pretty sure he did.
So that
kind of goes to my point that they had opportunities that they just couldn't capitalize on.
Yeah. And I know the Bengals won that game, but good God, the Bengals are a frustrating team. And look, I know Chuck's happy about that, but, you know, Mr. AFC North himself. And I know Adam's not thrilled because he's a big Joe Burrow fan. Then again, so am I. I mean, I really want the Bengals to do well, but what
is Burrow's fault anymore?
It's really not. It's like, it's got to be Taylor, right? Are we all in agreement, even Tuck? Are we all in agreement that it's Taylor and whoever this O-line coach is?
I'm not. I think it's the whole Bengals organization. I think top to bottom, they were blessed with some really good player decisions through the draft and some good free agency signings, which worked out for them. And then it all fell apart because they made really bad personnel decisions. They still are. We've mentioned this a million times on the show. They pissed off all of their star talent, and they're at risk of losing all of them. In fact, again, Joe Burrow in the next few years could ask to be out the door as well.
You're more correct than you realize, because like at this point, I think the writing's on the wall that Trey Hendrickson is gone and T. Higgins is gone. It's all hinging on Chase. If they piss off Chase to the point where Chase leaves, I think that Joe Burrow will demand a trade if Chase leaves, because that's, you know, because that's what they did. It's like, it was so weird.
What reason does Burrow have to stay at that point?
He would have no reason to. And for the record, the Bengals literally had the widest open Super Bowl window. And the reason that it is slamming shut as we speak is solely on them. It wasn't due to like a cap crunch or bad injury luck. They closed it themselves. Honestly, fire Taylor, their GM might have to go, and there's nothing you can do about the owner. Mike Brown is just cheap.
He's very cheap.
Yeah. I think that just in general, the biggest problem is this Bengals defense, and you saw that with the way that the Ravens game went on. Like, Joe Burrow putting up almost 400 yards, Jamar almost having 200 yards, and they lose. And they also let Jaden Daniels and the Commanders put up 35 on them. That's Jaden Daniels' breakout game. I think the biggest problem is their defense, but there's so many problems with the Bengals that it's not just the defense, unfortunately.
Good for me.
Yeah, good for you, Tuck.
Sure.
Running away with it over there.
Yeah, I know that. We're not running away with it because we still got to deal with Pittsburgh.
No.
You're really saying Pittsburgh, that's really a problem.
They're 4-2.
I don't care about that.
And they're about to start Russ this week.
I don't know why, but hey, that's their decision.
The Steelers have a wide receiver that doesn't run routes. That half-asses his routes, I should say.
Even with Fields starting, they're nothing special. They have a conservative quarterback who just plays mistake-free ball. As soon as you force him to throw the ball more, it all unravels. This is a Steelers team that is
– yeah.
I mean, they just sprinkle that Steelers magic every single year, and they're magically 9-8, and they're not a threat for the gazillionth year in a row. That's what the Steelers are.
Thank you.
And like the Bengals were your biggest threat, Justin, to that Ravens team. And you slammed the door shut on their contention hopes last week.
There's really like no threat to the Ravens, low key. Because I mean,
Cleveland's an even bigger mess.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned what they did to the Ravens. Pittsburgh is just going to be mid, and they're going to be mid as long as Tomlin is coach. And then there's the Browns. They are the Browns. We already know.
You don't even need that.
Yeah, and insert a Sean Watson joke here. I got nothing.
We are up there in time, so we're going to slam the door shut on the episode, but anything else? Anything else quick?
No. Let's wrap this sucker up.
All right. Let's get this going. All right. Well, great episode. Lots and lots of stuff to talk about today. Great rookie performances from our quarterbacks.
Back-to-back Tuesdays of insane news, that's for sure.
It's insane. Yeah. All right. Well, that'll do it for us tonight. Thank you for listening to us. We have new episodes out on Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and Fridays at 5. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We also have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Also, be sure to follow our Instagram at FumbleRooski_podcast to keep up with our podcast and latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. Over and out.